Please listen carefully.
You are listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. I'm Ron Smith.
And I'm Derek Hatchard. Whatever your role in the software development industry, join us in our search for inspiration and insights for builders and leaders.
Go to ardentdev.com to find more interviews and subscribe by email. Follow us on Twitter at ardentdev.
Welcome to the Ardent Development Podcast. I'm Derek Hatchard, here with Ron Smith, and today we are talking with Andrew Burke. Andrew has been a professional independent developer for over 20 years, working in everything from HyperCard and Lotus Notes to Ruby on Rails and iOS. In addition to building software for various businesses, he teaches web development, speaks at conferences, and has several SaaS products and iOS apps on the side. And in his spare time, he also does fan art mashups of iconic science fiction ships and characters with iconic Nova Scotian scenery. I think my favorite is the fisherman demanding the return of Firefly. Right. So welcome, Andrew. It's good to have you on.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Today we're talking about weird things about time, and this is something that you've been basically on the conference circuit. I guess it was 2015 you did that talk at DevCon, and insanely popular talk. People love it. People still tell me how much they enjoyed that talk. You know, you've done it in Montreal, Vancouver, I don't know nowhere else. Talking about time has me thinking. We are recording this in December. Which, you know, starts with, you know, DEC, which to me means 10, but December is the 12th month of the year. So what the heck is up with that?
Yeah, that's the first weird thing about time I talk about in the talk. Yeah, anybody who's a programmer knows that the closer you look at things like times and dates, the weirder and weirder it gets. And I've had a lot of times in my career where I get really frustrated with, you know, time and date tracking and time zones and stuff. And so I started really looking into things and got really kind of obsessed and about how all these, you know, calendars work and where the names for things come from and how these systems fit together. And I found they kept reminding me of stuff in software. And so the first thing I talk about is that if you ever notice that the last 4 months of the year have the wrong name. So September has a 7 in the name, but it's actually the 9th month, and October and November and December. And that's sort of always a good hook to get people started in the talk, because everyone's like, huh, never noticed that before. And what's funny is that a lot of people figure that it's because people put July, you know, the Romans put July and August in. And you notice after August, you have September, and that's where the names were wrong, because July was named after Julius Caesar and August was named after Augustus Caesar. So they named these months after these emperors. And a lot of people say that was my first impression, was they must have just added these months and stuck them in there. But it turns out those months were actually named Quintilis and Sextilis before they were called July and August. So it turned out half of the months of the year had the wrong names, because Quintilis has a 5 in it and Sextilis has a 6. So that got me even more interested in how things fit together. And eventually I discovered that it looks like the very, very, very early Romans just didn't bother counting the first part of the year. So they basically started in March and went to December, and they only had 10 months. But those months were still about 30 days. The beginning of the year, which is, you know, what we now have is January, February, they just didn't bother because it's muddy and gross. And if you're a farmer or a warrior, there's nothing you can do. So they just sort of hung out at home and waited until they could do stuff. And that's when they started labeling the months. Obviously, that didn't last very long once they got more sophisticated and the culture got bigger. But that's sort of supposedly the origin of where the month names come from, is that they just didn't bother naming a whole chunk of their year, which I found kind of fascinating.
Still kind of feels that way in January and February, right?
Exactly. I mean, I sort of thought about having like in the Maritimes, we could have a sort of a, everything from January to maybe about April, we could just have this month called, you know, terrible or something, or, you know, we just
slump.
Why bother counting the time until, like, you know, when it's just snow and like mud and rain and, you know, And there's some of those times of year, I'm sure you get the same thing there, where we still have snow on the ground in late April, and it's kind of depressing. So you always think about, like, how we name these things sort of reflects the world that we're in and the context that we're in. And especially as developers, I always think about, as an engineer, you sort of want to cover everything and be really, really thorough, but often users don't want to know all the terrible stuff. So, you know, if the Romans could actually skip out a whole 6th of the year and eventually end up taking over the known world anyway, it's good to sort of think about maybe where your what what you can skip in your UI or your, you know, process that would actually still make it useful for users. So that's the kind of thing, the whole talk's kind of got a lot of that kind of thing, where the, you know, this weird stuff that happened in history turns out to kind of reflect on stuff we do all the time as developers. And that's kind of been one of the fun things about doing the talk.
Yeah, and it really is a fun talk. I encourage everybody to go watch one of the YouTube recordings of it. It's thoroughly enjoyable. So it kind of caught your interest. And I know when you came to speak in New Brunswick a couple of years ago, you already had a recording of the talk. Walk us through a little bit of how did this evolve from, hey, I learned a few things, to I'm going to go and really talk about weird things about time and help to shed some light on some of this weirdness to the rest of the developer community.
Well, I kept finding things, and there's a bunch of things I couldn't fit into the talk, even things with, like, actually one I do have in the, and I've removed it since for time, but one I have in a lot of the recordings is off by one errors, you know, start, do you start from one or zero, that came back, that all, went all the way back to sort of 50 BC, which is kind of funny, and all these weird sort of programmery things. And so I kind of got obsessed with this myself. And then I did a sort of rough version of this talk several years ago at, we have a PodCamp in Halifax, which is sort of an unconference, and people just sort of show up and do talks. And a very early version of this talk, which was kind of a rough version, I did there, and people seemed to like that. And then when I sort of really decided I wanted to get much more into doing speaking, I've been doing a lot of programming over the years, but I mostly do sort of complicated business software, trying to model messy business processes. So I haven't usually had a lot of chance to do super leading edge, bleeding edge software with the shiniest new tools, because usually those are not the kinds of things you want to have, run a business on. They're kind of fun to show off, but they're hard to run a business on. So I've tended to do work with stuff that's fairly stable and not very exciting often. So, you know, I actually do have another talk I do that's about stuff that's really cool in Ruby, but it's stuff that most people have already been doing for about a decade. So it's not leading edge. So I was trying to find a really good in to have an interesting topic that would be cool for people in conferences. And this calendar thing, or this, you know, time thing, sort of seemed to be a really big, really good idea, because for one thing, it's a stuff that a lot of people don't know. And for the other thing, a lot of it happened 1,000 years ago, so I don't have to keep redoing the talk every year when the technology changes.
Smart. Yeah.
What about writing apps for changing time zones and that kind of thing? Did you get into that very much?
A little bit. What I try to do whenever I do the talk is I always try to find recent news items. There's a little bit at the end where I usually say, well, you know, this is all history. We don't have any of these problems anymore, right? And then there's always something new in the news that I find, you know, with either the latest one I do is like daylight savings time. Every single country and state and province in the world seems to have their own different time of doing daylight savings time, and it changes all the time. So every time there's a daylight savings, places like South Sudan, Sudan used to be one country, now it's South Sudan and North Sudan, and North Sudan is keeping daylight savings, but South Sudan isn't. Among all the other problems they have in South Sudan, daylight savings is one of those. And constantly there's all these adjustments have to be made. Every country's got different ones. And leap year and leap seconds is another big deal. Amazon S3 had to go through a huge nightmare to figure out how to handle leap seconds, because obviously if you've got a whole system with lots of cron jobs running in a giant data center, having an extra second suddenly show up can really mess up all of your delicate time-based systems. So they had to do a whole bunch of juggling to fit that kind of thing in. So there's all that kind of stuff happens. The GPS satellites have to take into account relativity, because they're going so fast and they're going into a different part of the gravity well of Earth, which changes their actual perception of time. And so we have to take this into account when figuring out where we are. We have to take relativity and how time is actually kind of elastic, just to figure out GPS, which, you know, yeah, it's kind of insane making. And actually, when I gave the talk at Maritime DevCon, you know, I sort of put this GPS thing in and talked about, you know, people going to Mars and, you know, all these probes. It's really difficult because it takes a long time for time to go through space, for messages to go through space. And the talk right after mine opened, just by coincidence, opened with how complicated it is to communicate with satellites. And they had something that was, I think, looking at the sun from four different places in the solar system. And it was really, really difficult to tell when something happens at the same time, because these satellites are in different places. It takes maybe 10 minutes for the messages to get to each other. And then they're going at different speeds and, you know, for the different messages. And so everything is totally asynchronous. And then you have to counter for like relativity and all that kind of stuff too. And it's just completely nuts. And so it was a great follow-up to my talk where he was like, yep, that's exactly what happens. It's completely weirder than you ever thought.
So let me ask, let's do something easy then, Andrew.
Okay.
I just want to put a countdown to Easter on my website. That's easy, right?
Easy. Yeah. Well, now it is because it's all on your computer, but it took several centuries for them to figure this out. And then several centuries more to actually stabilize it. Yeah. Cause Easter is one of those things. Part of the problem is Easter is based on Passover, roughly. It's loosely based on the Jewish festival of Passover, and the Jewish calendar runs on a lunar year, while the the Julian and Gregorian, Christian-ish calendar runs on a solar year, and the cycles of the phases of the moon is a really common way to measure time because it's really obvious to look up and see the moon. But the cycles of where the sun is and the seasons and the lengths of the days and things like that is also really popular. And the problem is that those don't fit together very well, unfortunately. So there's actually, if you try to track lunar months and solar year, you have 12.36 lunar months in a solar year, so they don't actually fit. So civilizations have to sort of pick whether they're going to track the moon or the sun. And by picking Easter to be sort of loosely tied to Passover, it's putting a lunar festival calendar into a solar calendar, and that kind of makes it a giant mess. So you end up with these, so sort of the three rules for Easter. It looks like, the early church ended up arguing about a lot of things, and one of them was Easter. But they finally figured out a simple system, which is Easter is the first Sunday after the first full moon, after the spring equinox. And so that sort of makes sense. But once again, we've got this really messy thing where you've got the equinox is a solar cycle, and the full moon is a lunar cycle, and they don't fit together very well. And then you've got this Sunday thing, which is an extra arbitrary 7-day cycle on top of that. So figuring out when Easter actually is turns out to be this huge, messy calculation. And back when they were figuring this out early on, this was the Dark Ages even, they didn't have the modern concept of decimal fractions, and they mostly wrote everything by hand in Roman numerals, which is terrible for doing complicated math. And so there was lots of people did these systems for figuring out when Easter is, but it would take forever. And a lot of them had lots of mistakes, but you wouldn't know they had mistakes until suddenly one year Easter turns out to be on a Saturday or something like that. So it became this huge nightmare mess, and all sorts of different cultures had different versions of celebrating Easter. And you have one of the things I talk about in my talk is a particular king and queen in Britain they each celebrated Easter at different times, and it became a big headache for everybody. They finally figured it out, and that actual thing they figured out for Easter turns out to be why we count this year as 2017. And it's a long story, which I'll go into the talk, but you'll have to watch the talk to get the details on that. But Easter is such a weird mess. It took a long time to figure it out, and it sort of ties in with all sorts of weird issues of how the solar year doesn't fit into the lunar year, how the days don't fit into the months, and turns out to have all sorts of weird side effects with leap year and rounding errors and all sorts of things too.
There's one more thing from your talk that I want to ask you about, and then I want to get some of your sort of bigger picture thoughts. But this one is cool. Anyone who's got a Mac or a Linux machine or a Unix-based machine can go and do this. You do, I think it's Cal 9752, September 1752.
Yeah, you'll end up, depending where you are, if you're in the English-speaking world, probably you'll get this, but if you're, say, in France or something, you might not. But yeah, Cal 9 1752. Gives you a month with 3 weeks in it. And that's not actually a bug. Well, it's not a computer bug. It's not a software bug, but it actually is due to a bug in how people measured time. And this is actually due to the way they had to fix the bug. But it's a bug that took centuries to figure out and centuries more to actually fix. And in fact, hasn't been completely fixed everywhere in the world yet. Because it's what's one of those annoying bugs that sort of only accumulates after things have been running for a while, because it's basically a small rounding error that accumulates. And then it took centuries for people to find it. And then once they found it, it took a lot of time to actually implement a solution that would get everyone on board. And it became a big headache. And basically, it's that when they set up leap year, which was a great idea, because calendars before then, especially in the Roman Empire, used to be adjusted on an ad hoc basis. You have months following the moon, but then you have some extra days in the year because the months don't totally match. And they'd sort of let those accumulate and then add an extra month. And the problem with that is that was decided mainly by politicians. and what could possibly go wrong? And it was sort of a bad luck thing to have this extra month soaring in. So when they set up, when Julius Caesar set up the Julian calendar, it was self-correcting. It had a leap year. You'd have an extra day, you'd add to February, and then it would just self-correct all the time. But the problem is the month turns out to be the year. It's 365.2425 and change days. So you end up losing about a day every century, even if you're doing leap year. So after a few hundred years, the dates were kind of out of sync from the equinox by, you know, about a week. And, you know, when you're trying to figure out Easter based on when the equinox is, this can really mess up all your calculations. And it took centuries and centuries to figure it out. And Catholic Europe set it up in 1563, adjusted their calendars around then by removing 10 days from the year. But Protestant Europe, by that point, Europe had split into Protestant and Catholic, so the Protestants weren't going to go with this like Catholic thing. And so this became this big headache. If you left France and arrived in England, you ended up arriving in the past, which is kind of crazy making. So because France had adjusted their calendar, but England hadn't, because they didn't want to do some weird Catholic thing. So all sorts of crazy. It's this kind of thing that makes historians totally nuts, because you can't tell when something actually happened, because, you know, things keep, you know, everybody has a different date system. And I almost did a whole other talk about how all the different countries tried to solve this themselves, because it's basically debugging, but it's debugging done by kings and emperors and popes and stuff. And, you know, and these are people who are not usually used to dealing with the kinds of things we have to deal with when we debug. So how do you find the problem? How do you fix the problem? How do you get people to accept the problem? And part of the thing is it became really political, obviously, because, you know, it was about Easter and popes and stuff like that. And England finally, you know, a century later than, or a century or so, 2 centuries almost after Catholic Europe switched, England finally switched in September 1752. And to adjust, they had to remove 11 days from the month. And so September 1752 is the adjustment. And that's why when you look at it, it's Tuesday the 1st, Wednesday the 2nd, Thursday the 14th. And that caused a lot of headaches for everybody. I mean, it's fine now, but for that year was actually kind of tumultuous, because there's supposedly riots in the streets with people demanding their 11 days back. And I think that I remember they had to do a complicated thing for things like, of course, you're paying rent or you're doing something by the month. Suddenly you're paying a lot more rent because it was only a 3-week month and you still have to pay your full month of rent or something like that. So they ended up, for the rest of the year, they had to do two certain different versions of tracking time. For like the month, the old monthly cycle that's a full month long, and the one that's the calendar cycle, it was a big headache. But once again, these are all debugging issues in a certain way, and it's weird to see parliamentarians trying to figure out how to debug something.
Yeah, as much as I like to think that we are evolved as a civilization, I can't help but think if we did that today, there'd be riots in the streets again.
Oh yeah.
Andrew, tell me, you've got in the talk that you give, you have a number of lessons and takeaways that really software professionals can glean from these weird things about time and some of the history about how our calendars work. Mm-hmm. Can you recap for us just sort of a few of those things? What are some of the big lessons and takeaways that you think are important for the modern software professional from all this historical baggage that we carry around with time?
Yeah, I mean, the big one about the whole Easter, the whole removing days from the year to get the adjust for this rounding error, technology ends up being cultural in many ways. They figured out that there was a problem sometime in like the 12th or 13th century, even earlier possibly, but they only finally got a fix in several centuries later. But it then took centuries more for everyone to roll in. In fact, still the Eastern Orthodox churches, the Greek and Russian Orthodox churches, still haven't switched over to the Gregorian calendar. They still use the Julian calendar, which is why Greek and Russian Easter is actually a week and a half later than Protestant and Catholic Easter and Christmas. It's kind of weird. Anyway, the issue is much more about culture than it is about technology per se. And I think we see a lot of that these days with, say, Twitter and Facebook. You know, they think they're all engineers, Google as well, YouTube. They're engineers. They want to solve a technical problem. But these technical problems end up having all these huge cultural echoes across everywhere where, you know, oh, we want to have a news feed. And then it turns out that news feed ends up being full of fake news that ends up disrupting civil society with all sorts of things. And you put things on Twitter and you change the way Twitter works. And suddenly there's all sorts of extra echoes that come across because the problems are cultural and political and sometimes religious. Those turn out to be much more difficult problems to fix than simply changing how many characters there are in a field or something like that. Also, I've always been a fan of history, and one thing, you know, I often study military history, but the problem is military history is kind of extra depressing because, you know, it's big projects, it's big project management, it's how to deal with disasters, but it ends up being having, you know, a lot of people die and suffer, and it's terrible. But this one with calendars was just sort of a nice big sweep of history that didn't necessarily involve explosions and machine guns and stuff. But I did like you, every time you read study history, you see these sort of echoes that everybody's dealing with giant fiascos. You know, every large project at the end of the day is kind of a fiasco. And especially as a developer who works mostly on my own, I always figure, oh my gosh, I'm the only one ever having these problems. You know, I'm the only person who's ever had a bug that had in a big software project that's gone live. And of course, reading history and reading other postmortems of other projects, I realized, no, that's what everyone deals with. And I think reading history and looking at history really helps you realize that you're not alone. Everyone's had to deal with weird stuff like this for centuries, to be honest. You know, one of the other things that keeps coming up is because calendars and time systems are inherently messy, they don't round to nice round numbers. We wish they did, but they don't. We constantly have to sort of use things that aren't quite precise to be usable. The last bit in the talk is actually about sort of time zones and Greenwich Mean Time, and there was a lot of pushback when they instituted standardized Greenwich Mean Time in the UK, for example, because a lot of places would, you know, it's easy to tell when it's noon by just looking at the sun and the way shadows are. And even in a place the size of the UK, noon can be up to 10 minutes, 12 minutes away from the Greenwich Mean Time noon. And people got really upset that, you know, you're enforcing centralized noon from, you know, London, and, you know, we have our own noon here. And so in fact, through the 19th century, there's clocks that actually had two sets of minute hands. So you could keep track of, you know, when it's noon here, when it's official noon. This cornerstone of our entire civilization, time zones and Greenwich Mean Time that we use to coordinate all of our systems all around the world, is actually wrong almost everywhere. It's actually incorrect. It's not actually, you know, it's not actually noon in most parts of the world when it says that it's noon, because you're always off by, you know, whatever from the central part of Greenwich Mean Time. So it's actually, the time is never correct. Almost ever, except unless you're in a tiny piece of the world. You think that the foundations of everything you build is super solid, but it turns out nothing's actually, the closer you look, the weirder it gets, and the more inconsistent and strange it turns out everything's based on.
I can picture you, Andrew, talking to someone who just ran a Y2K project.
Exactly.
Them telling you, you know, geez, there's these two digits we're missing, and you're looking at them thinking you have no idea.
Yeah, I'm doing it. And in fact, one of the other things I bring up is that, you know, the nativity, whether it happened or not, is not something I go into, but the general consensus was it actually happened at 6 BC, not 0. So it actually should be 2023 right now. And that's mostly due to rounding calculations and a convenient reference date that people could use better for figuring out calculations. But yeah, so even the year, the actual year that it is wrong.
So it's all a mess. We don't know what year it is.
We don't know what time it is. We don't know when Easter is. Yeah, exactly. Well, the thing is, the point of the weird thing, of the intro for the last weird thing about time zones is that at Oxford, you're allowed to be 5 minutes and 2 seconds late for class or any meeting at Oxford, because Oxford is 5 minutes and 2 seconds off from Greenwich time. So so Oxford time is like our time here, not Greenwich time, because they're sort of passive aggressively sort of, you know, cranky about the fact that London got to, you know, Greenwich got to be the official time, when of course Oxford, that's where all the smart people are. They should have the official time. But so you're allowed to be late for class in Oxford. So,
love it.
So yeah, maybe tell them in your time zone, you're allowed to come home late, but not in our time zone.
This is all just awesome. I find this so fun to talk about. We are at the end of our time, however. Okay. I would encourage everybody to...
We actually have an extra 5 minutes and 2 seconds.
And 2 seconds.
Oh, boy.
I want to encourage everybody, go to YouTube, search for 4 Weird Things About Time. You'll find a copy of Andrew's talk there. Watch the whole talk. It's great. I think I've watched it 3 times now, actually, just if I can be totally open and transparent with everybody. But before we let you go, Andrew, yeah, can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
My big thing, I do a lot on Twitter. So I'm AJL Burke, B-U-R-K-E, on Twitter. That also goes for Instagram. Mostly gets sent back to Twitter anyway. I have a website for my business, which is shindigital.com, shindigital.com. If you want to look at fun Photoshop pictures of spaceships in Nova Scotia, you can go to starshipstarthere.ca. That's starships start here, all one word, .ca. That's a lot of fun. And that's probably the best ways to get hold of me. Twitter is where most of the action is, and you can follow some links from my Twitter profile there as well.
Okay, great. We will put links to all of those things in the show notes so Excellent. People can find you there as well. Thank you for your time today, Andrew. This
no
was
problem.
Super fun. Really, really great talking to you.
Thanks. Thanks very much. Great talking.
You've been listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. Be sure to visit us at ardentdev.com for the show notes, including links to the books and resources mentioned. And don't forget to sign up for email notifications so that you're the first to know about new episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at ardentdev. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review on iTunes as it helps other people discover the podcast. Thanks for listening.